This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
In this hour, in the 10 o'clock hour, Robert Wilkie, former Secretary of the Department of Veterans Affairs, also he is a visiting fellow with the Heritage Foundation, talking about the life and career of General Colin Powell. I don't know about you folks, he's an individual that I looked up to. There were so many different leadership qualities that we looked at that General Powell exhibited each and every day. In fact, when we developed some of our leadership training at the Jefferson Parish Sheriff's Office, a number of provisions within same were based off of General Colin Powell's outlook on leadership. Joining us, Robert Wilkie. Robert, welcome to the show.
Hey, thank you, Neil. Good to be home.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Absolutely, homegrown here. So, Robert, you had you and your family both had a connection to General Colin Powell. Tell us about it.
Sure. My father served with General Powell in Vietnam. They were both majors. They were both students at the same time at the Command and General Staff College at Fort Leavenworth. And I certainly was privileged to serve with him in the Bush administration when I worked for Condi Rice and then later for Don Rumsfeld. But I think the more important relationship that I developed with him was when I was Secretary of VA. We both shared a passion for the soldiers of Vietnam. As you know, my father was grievously wounded in the invasion of Cambodia. And when he recovered after 3 years at home and then went back to Fort Bragg in the 82nd, he couldn't even wear his uniform on post because those were the times. And General Powell felt that viscerally. And he devoted his post-service years to righting the wrongs of Vietnam. And one of the things we worked on was to ensure that Vietnam veterans got the same benefits that veterans of other wars got in terms of VA services at home health care, which they were not entitled to. And that was an important part of the relationship that we had. We cut the ribbon on America's National Veterans Museum in Columbus, Ohio, but we were always thinking about Vietnam.
Yeah, you know, when you I was reading somewhere, and I can't remember exactly where it was. He, in his first tour in Vietnam, I remember General Powell saying that he was that we were there for all the right reasons.
Yes, he was. He was part of that first group of advisors. It's interesting because my father at the time was down the road from you at Jackson Barracks as the regular Army advisor to the Washington Artillery of New Orleans because nobody knew about Vietnam. And General Powell, as a young lieutenant, volunteered to go as one of the first groups there. He was wounded. He stepped on a punji stick. But he often talked about it being the right thing to do because we were there helping create a force that could fight the communists. What soured him and soured so many was the piecemeal approach that happened after Kennedy's death, where our soldiers were just thrown in willy-nilly and not really allowed to bring the full weight of American power to bear. And we lost 56,000 troops because of that.
Yeah, he was, as you pointed out, in that first wave, he was early onset in Vietnam, where a lot of the strategies changed over the next 3 to 4 years after he did his first tour, right?
Right. And that's what led Newell to the Powell Doctrine. Which was, it's very simple. If America goes in, it goes in with overwhelming force. But more importantly, it goes in with the support of the American people. That was the direct result of his experiences, two tours in Vietnam. And it reflected, I think, the learning that a lot of those officers had coming out of there. One other thing I'll say, what I think his greatest contribution was, and, you know, I'll go back to New Orleans' greatest mayor, Chet Morrison. He was obviously mayor before you and I were around, but everybody knew him. And my parents would say he would show up in uniform. As the mayor, he was a very decorated soldier. What happened between that time and the end of Vietnam is that we forgot our affections for soldiers. And I think General Powell's greatest service was that he reminded the American people that those soldiers should be first in their affections. And he was the face of the recovery of particularly the United States Army in the years after Vietnam. And I think that's his greatest service, because when he came back, when my father came back, there was nobody out there saying thank you for your service. In fact, people didn't even want to talk to them. And Powell changed that.
No doubt he was always interested in the stature of the military, right? Whether, you know,
right.
of those that served. And obviously the Powell Doctrine was an articulation of same. I was curious. He was a very terse speaker. I mean, just blunt and to the point. And that may have been one of his attributes or characteristics that I love the most about him. He didn't wander in his speech.
Right.
You know, it was it was always very direct. And you pointed out as to what he said, our strategy, when he was talking about going the military's approach in the Gulf War, he says our strategy in going after this army is very simple. First, we're going to cut it off, and then we're going to kill it.
And right.
I think a lot of people were taken aback at the time when he said that. They just truly did not know how to deal with how terse and how blunt he was and to the point.
Right. And that's a characteristic that we've lost in terms of many of our military leaders. It was an old-fashioned Eisenhower, Patton approach to the world. But always at the bottom of this was, we get in and we do everything we can to ensure that we have the fewest number of casualties, not to the point that we don't see the mission, but to bring all of American power to bear. And that's what you saw. And I say this as an airman. That's what you saw in the air campaign prior to the launch of the ground troops in Desert Storm. Powell insisted that the Air Force lay waste to the Republican Guard and Saddam's militia forces before the 82nd and the 101st and the 1st Marine Division stepped foot into Iraq proper. And it worked. And I can only say that if we've had his leadership and his advice, I would have thought that the disaster in Kabul from a few months ago would have turned out differently.
He had a little bit of a different perspective relative to an accepted casualty rate, I guess is another way of putting it, right?
Right. And that really led to the Powell Doctrine. And I know I've talked at length with my father about this, and using troops for simple political goals, immediate political
back to
goals,
what
like
I was
Lyndon
talking
Johnson
about
did. Yeah
back about the stature of the military
right
and the
right.
use of same right yeah
right
go ahead
absolutely.
I'm sorry
no and you know, he saw in Vietnam President Johnson moving troops around to meet the needs of the latest poll, and he often talked about that. And he always said that the lives of these young men are too precious to be used to calculate who's going to win the next congressional seat or what legislation is going to pass. And he felt deeply about that. And, you know, that to me, as the son of a combat soldier, and I still serve, is absolutely vital when it comes to leadership of the armed services.
So, for the benefit of the listening audience, the Powell Doctrine, the first is a vital national security interest threatened.
Yes. Right.
And of course, it requires an affirmative answer to all of these. Do we have a clear, attainable objective? Obviously, he was very, very concerned and did not like mission creep at all.
Right.
Third, have the risk and cost been fully and frankly analyzed? And I love the way that he uses the word frankly. And I think later in his career, many times he felt isolated in a couple of administrations because that frank talk was not welcome.
Right. And we certainly saw that in the second Iraq war. Another thing that he always said to us, and I say that being a junior staffer when I first met him professionally, was if you broke it, you bought it. And you know, he saw the mission in Iraq go from one of looking for weapons of mass destruction to nation building, actually absolutely the opposite of the original mission. And that's when we get in trouble. That's when the American people grow tired. We lose troops. We lose our reason for being. He often quoted a piece from the great German Chancellor Bismarck, and he kept it in his folder whenever he went. It said, "Woe be unto the statesman whose reasons for entering war are not as clear at the end as they were at the beginning." And I think we would do well to pay heed to that. And he certainly did.
It seemed to me that he firmly believed that the military was a trusted and useful asset, both for national security and obviously, but really believed that it was very susceptible to not only be improperly used, but overly used.
Yes. And he preached that when he went to the State Department. One of the tragedies that I've seen in the 25 years that I've been in the national security business is that we've relied on the military to do too much. We've underfunded the State Department, and we have young officers out there doing the work of ambassadors and civil engineers and agriculture experts, and they're not trained to do that. We don't bring, as Powell would often say, we don't bring all of the elements of American power to bear, what we would call soft power. And we've overly relied on the military to do all of these things. And as we saw in Vietnam, we come to the point where the force breaks and people get tired of doing this. And it was something that he felt deeply. I don't think a lot of people on both sides of the political aisle, Secretary Gates being the great exception and General Mattis, understand that. And we continue to get in trouble because we never learned those lessons.
Yeah. We'll continue this conversation with Robert Wilkie, former Secretary of the Department of Veterans Affairs, about General Colin Powell, the life and times of General Colin Powell. Stay with us. If you have a question, please give us a call, 504-260-1870 on the Oakland Heart Jewelers Talk and Text Line. We will be right back. Stay with us.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget.
Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Folks, we're visiting with Robert Wilkie, one of our own from here, former Secretary of the Department of Veterans Affairs. He also serves as a visiting fellow at the Heritage Foundation. Both Robert and his father crossed paths with General Colin Powell, who's one of my heroes, somebody that I really have enjoyed following his career. And I think we would be remiss, Robert, if we didn't say that, you know, talk a little bit about General Powell's life. Born in New York City in 1937 and was raised in the South Bronx. His parents immigrated to the United States from Jamaica, so he's both Caribbean and African descent. He was educated in New York City public schools, graduated from the City College of New York. He was a geologist. Mm-hmm. He participated in ROTC, and that's where he kind of, he says, found his way, to speak, and received a commission as a second lieutenant in the Army upon graduation, and served as a professional soldier for 35 years. I have to ask this question, though. It kind of struck me. You know, he was obviously the first Caribbean African American Secretary of State. He was the first Caribbean African American National Security Advisor, the first Caribbean African American Joint Chiefs of Staff, and specifically in the National Security Advisor and Joint Chiefs of Staff role. I'm kind of curious, you know, in the military. So he didn't graduate from West Point. So he was, are you kind of an outlier when you're not?
Well, you know, it's interesting. So I'll just use my family. My father went to St. Aloysius and Loyola. When I was in high school, he was a senior officer in the 82nd Airborne Division. Of all of the senior officers, he's the only one who didn't go to West Point. And General Powell used to make this comment similar to yours. He said, here I am out of the South Bronx, and I'm up against West Point and Harvard, which made it a little more difficult at that time. I think the Army has changed, but he never let it get to it. And I can say that because my father didn't either. And the Army, he found out, could be the great leveler in that if you excel, if you perform, you're accepted. And he was actually one of those who began to break that cycle of West Point centeredness within the Army, and rose to the highest levels, of course, both as a soldier and as a civilian. But when he came into the service, it was a very pernicious thing. And one thing I'll add to that, you mentioned his background. He told me a story when his parents left Jamaica. Of course, they're citizens of the British Empire, because Jamaica's part of Britain. And he said, the most important thing that happened to me was where that ship turned. He said, if that ship had turned right outside of New York Harbor and gone to London or Southampton, the best I could have ever hoped to achieve would have been a sergeant in a low-tier British regiment. Not the Queen's Guards, but a regiment that was not as exalted as that. Said, but because it went left and went to the United States, I was given the opportunities. And one thing that is missed in all of this, and I know on the conservative side of the aisle, they don't like the secretaries' political stands later in life, that hides what is the most important thing about him. He loved this country. He always told young people that you are in the best place in the world to use your talents. And he always finished his lectures by reminding young people of that. And I wish we would hear more. The other thing is product of public education in New York City, both high school and also the City College of New York, which validated what he said later in life, that you can be anything in this country, and he certainly proved it.
We spent a lot of time in his country talking about meritocracy, right? And this is a man who worked hard every day. This is a man who loved what he did. This is a man who learned something every day. He's also a man who worried about what his legacy was going to be, you know, and he didn't take himself too seriously. Which was I talked earlier about the five, you know, what we embodied at JPSO in our leadership training. It was those five L's of leadership, and Colin Powell stood for each and every one of them as I went through his life. Unlike most conservatives, I take a different tack. I loved his independence.
Yeah.
Because having been a defrocked Republican many times myself, when I evaluate the candidates that put themselves up for public office, and it's clear and evident to anyone that of reason, of the two that offered themselves up, sometimes the party that you align with doesn't put the best candidate up.
And
when you're at the level that he is and others, to stand up and go against that, that's leadership. And I'll tell you, there's this one quote, if you would bear with me one moment. There was one quote that I loved. Someone asked him, how do you know you're a good leader? And he thought for a second, and he says, when men and women, young men and women will, and I'm paraphrasing this, will follow you into the bowels of darkness for no other reason other than curiosity. I love that quote.
You know,
that they just put themselves in full and complete trust in you as the individual that will be the caretaker, that will be the provider, that will be, but they don't want to miss the journey with you.
And I think that sums it up. And the other part of your comment, I wish more people would heed. The tradition in the military has always been to provide political leadership, the president, the Congress, with advice, no matter what your own political feelings are. It doesn't matter what the party of the people you are speaking with happen to belong to. My observation is we've gotten away from that. And I think there is a great danger of politicizing the armed forces in ways that were would have been unthinkable in General Powell's day or General Eisenhower, Chet Morrison's day, for instance. And he was a throwback to a better time. And Americans traditionally expect their soldiers to provide their political leaders with honest views, regardless of what they may think about politics or what they think the popular answer would be. And we've gotten too much into groupthink at that level.
Robert, I think if my memory serves me correct, during his entire military career, he was a registered independent. Is that correct?
Yes. Yeah,
it wasn't until he got out of the military that he actually affiliated with the Republican Party initially.
Right. Yeah,
I think he stayed Republican, and he may have gone back to independent at some point afterwards.
I think so, but you know, Noel, that was the way it was, and I think the way it should have been. I mean, people like my father and his colleagues, particularly Fort Bragg, I didn't even know they voted. Because General Marshall and General Eisenhower never voted. And that was their way of keeping the tradition alive in the best sense of the civilian-military relationship in this country. And you know, my fear is that we've gone too far in making politicians out of many of our military leaders.
But Powell didn't shy away from it, because he was quoted as saying, and I saw this in a New York Times article in the aftermath of his death. He says, anybody who becomes a senior officer had better have some political instincts or you're going to get ground up. We are a political nation. It is not a dirty word.
No. But in the context, I know when he said that, he was talking about the ability to navigate the Congress on behalf of the services. In his case, first the Army and then for the entire military as the chairman of the Joint Chiefs, to be an advocate. Because what he found is that the majority, the vast majority of people he was dealing with in Washington had no idea what it meant to put on a uniform. They'd never served. They didn't understand the culture or speak the language. And he felt part of his role was to educate them as to what soldiers do and what are the intractable requirements that soldiers must meet in order to carry out their mission. And it is a tough thing. It's a very tough place to navigate, and he probably did it better than anyone since Eisenhower.
Yeah. We got to get to a break. When we come back, let's talk about, and I think he, I don't know that he's ever said it was the low point in his career, but obviously
right.
was perceived by many as that. And in, I think in the years afterwards, he struggled with his UN speech in 2003. So let's talk about that when we come back okay. out of the break. 504-260-1870 on the Oakland Heart Jewelers Talk and Text Line. If you have a question for Robert Wilkie, give us a shout. We will be right back, folks. Stay tuned.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/decide. That's linkedin.com/decide. Terms and conditions apply.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify is got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odyssey podcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odyssey podcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/odyssey podcast.
We're talking about the life and times of General Colin Powell with Robert Wilkie, former Secretary of the Department of Veterans Affairs, and also serves as a visiting fellow at the Heritage. Robert, it is fair to say that General Powell was not really in favor of going and meddling in the Middle East and going into Iran nor Afghanistan. You referred earlier to the old Pottery Barn rule: you break it, you're going to own it. That was when that came about. When he said that, was leading up to when they were trying to decide, the Bush administration, that is, as to whether or not they were going to invade Iraq and go after the elimination of Saddam Hussein.
Right. I was there. I was a staffer on the National Security Council working for Dr. Rice. And the secretary spent an inordinate amount of time going over every piece of intelligence that he could find, many visits to CIA, many visits to the White House and to the NSC staff. He noted in an interview, I think in 2015, that the intelligence that he read led to the conclusion that he gave to to the United Nations. We since found that that was a massive intelligence failure. I don't fault him because I was reading the same things at the time at the National Security Council. So he did the best with what he was given. Where he really disagreed with the policy was when it changed. And he had a great distrust of what we now call neocons, neoconservatives, who really believed in remaking the entire world in the image of the West. So, I mean, he often said, you cannot turn Baghdad into Paris. But these folks had a very unrealistic view of what American power could do in a part of the world that, you know, ever since the time of Alexander the Great has been pretty untamable. And Powell always regretted that that change in mission cost so many lives. And, you know, we're still wrestling with it today.
You might not be able to answer this question, and it may not be a fair question. Was it an intelligence failure, or was it intelligence deception?
No,
or both?
I think that looking back, and particularly on looking back at what the CIA produced, I think that the intelligence was the product of wishful thinking. And I do think, and people will get mad at me saying this, I do think there were certain folks who tailored the intelligence to fit the political views of the administration, at least certain elements of the administration. And as a senior leader, both Dr. Rice and who was the National Security Advisor at the time, and General Powell were having to deal with what they were given. And believe me, I know both of them looked it over and over and over, and reached the conclusion that they did. But again, to me, the greatest regret that General Powell had was that the mission changed.
Yeah.
Instead of taking out weapons of mass destruction and Saddam Hussein, it turned into nation building. And we got stuck in that quagmire.
He was suspicious and skeptical of the intelligence, was he not? I mean, because I've read where he visited for hours and hours and hours.
Yeah. I saw it. Yeah.
And toiled over it and grilled intel analysts as to what they did in preparation for that speech before the UN.
Yes, he did. And as only a practitioner of the art could do, I mean, soldiers are the consumers of that kind of intelligence. And, I would argue that the UN was won over because of the power, the force of his personality. And he believed the intelligence. He ended up believing the intelligence at the time, and I did too. I think it was later that he really lost his faith in large elements of the intelligence community, and that's a kind of crisis that we still haven't gotten over.
Is this, you know, one of the dangers, and I think this is really a lesson of, I guess you could refer to it somewhat as a little bit of confirmation bias and everything else that goes along with that.
Yeah.
When you have an administration, you have a defense secretary, you have a vice president, or really hawks to a certain extent, and they very much influenced the outcomes and the conclusions drawn from intelligence, where they set things down a path that were almost, the genie was out of the bottle. There was no putting it back in.
Yeah. Well, once he made that speech, that's absolutely right. that there was no turning back from the original thrust of the Bush administration, which was to remove Saddam Hussein. But I will tell you one thing he never said, and I agreed with him wholeheartedly. He never called it a mistake, because he believed, having been through Vietnam, having watched young people die, that he would never tell a family that their loved one had died for a mistake. Because if that word had come from him, I think it would have been devastating psychologically for thousands of American families.
Well, I think he also recognized the human element of this process, right?
Right.
It's not, it is not infallible.
No. No, and I'll give you a more recent example of that. President Biden kept saying that there's no consensus. There was no consensus in the intelligence community about the viability of the Afghan defense forces. Well, there's never really consensus in the intelligence community. That's why you pay the president to make a final decision. And, you know, with General Powell and Dr. Rice, they were given the what they thought was the best information available, and they went with it.
Yeah, I think there is a difference, though, when you have the civilian leader of the military believe in A, and then you have
right.
a general on the ground believe in
yeah.
in A, and you yeah. have other individuals in the military who have assessed that same intelligence believe in A.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, you know, yeah. intel is intel, and someone at some level draws conclusions based on the intel.
Right.
You know, and,
right.
And obviously, and that was the one thing that I loved about Colin Powell. He never walked into the room unprepared, in my view.
Right.
I've read little anecdotal stories about him all the time, and he would cancel a meeting if he felt like he wasn't completely and totally prepared for that meeting.
Right.
And I think in later administrations, that's why they kind of isolated him, because yeah. I think they all knew he was going to be the most prepared individual in the room.
That's right. And he would cancel you if you weren't prepared. I saw that happen on a couple of occasions. No, that's absolutely right. He was always prepared, knew the briefing materials of the briefers better than the briefer did. And I'll just give you another example of his humanity. When he ran the State Department, and the State Department is very proud of itself, they're very proud of their pedigree in education, at least the leaders are. When he would go and seek information on a particularly troubled spot in the world, and the person with the fancy title would get up to talk, he'd say, no, let me hear from the desk officer, the person who actually does the day-to-day work on this issue. I want him to tell me what's going on in country X. I'll get back with you. And he said it politely. But, you know, that to me is the mark of a great leader, someone who makes everyone else, no matter where they are on the spectrum, feel that they are an integral part of the organization. And I also, in fact, I've said this publicly, I think the last time the State Department functioned was when General Powell was the secretary.
I can't disagree. I just absolutely love that story you just told. And thank you so much for joining us. Unfortunately, this hour just flew by. Robert Wilkie, former Secretary of the Department of Veterans Affairs. We really appreciate your time and your insight in sharing these incredible stories with us.
Always love being with you, Sheriff. Thank you for getting me home.
Thank you, sir. Appreciate the same. Have a great week. We will be right back. Stay with us.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.